apparently we have a technical challenge. I would say tell them it could be as long as 10 or 15 minutes. And what we're going to do to fill in that time is introduce ourselves here in this room, because I think it's important for us to all get acquainted with each other anyway. So instead of 10 seconds to introduce yourself, how about 30? And what I think we'd all like to hear from each other is our name, our affiliation, which sector we're from, whether we're from the ISP or IXP or business user or intellectual property or any other sector. And this is an open meeting, so everyone is welcome. We'll begin working the agenda when our first speaker arrives, and then we will connect with our remote speaker, our remote members. I need for Wolf, if you would please, to send that same email to the CSG Executive Committee saying thank you, because you've got those connections. They have to reach the IPC. So my name is Marilyn Cade. Okay, we were going to start here with this mic, but we can start back there as well. My name is Marilyn Cade. I'm the chair of the business constituency and the alternate to the commercial stakeholder group. So for those of you who are new to the organization at ICANN, ICANN has stakeholder groups that have affinity with each other. So there's a registry stakeholder group and a registrar stakeholder group, and there's a commercial stakeholders group. And the commercial stakeholders group is everybody involved in business except the contracted parties. So the contracted parties are registries or registrars, and they have their own stakeholder group. And then we have a non-commercial stakeholder group. So this particular stakeholder group is made up of ISPs and connectivity providers, business users, and representatives of business users and intellectual property community. I own a micro enterprise that provides consultation and services in internet governance and have been a longstanding member of the business constituency. So hopefully I didn't exceed my 30 seconds. We'll go to Tony, and then we will go to the back of the room and start from there, Ron.
Hello, my name is Tony Harris. I'm a member of the Executive Committee on the Commercial Stakeholder Group and also a member of the ISPCP constituency. My day job is I'm executive director of the Argentina Internet Association, and I am also executive director of the Latin America and Caribbean Federation of the Internet and Electronic Commerce, and I also sit on the executive committee, which is the equivalent of the board, of Global Knowledge Partnership, which is a worldwide alliance of organizations that promote social inclusion through technology. Do we go to the next person, Marilyn? We're starting at the back, right? Would you go ahead, please?
Sure. My name is Jonathan Zook, and I'm the president of the Association for Competitive Technology. That's my day job, which starts at about 5 p.m. every day while we're here. We're an IT trade association based in Brussels that represents about 4,000 small and medium-sized IT companies around the world. On a wide range of issues, one of the key issues that we address around the world is intellectual property. So the lion's share of my participation here at ICANN has been on the issue of intellectual property, but increasingly has been involved in process-oriented questions such as public participation, simplification, and greater business participation in ICANN, and so that's where I see a lot of my efforts will be here.
Hi, my name is Zahid Jamil. I'm one of the counselors from the BC to the GNSO. I am, as an individual, a business that basically does dispute resolution in Pakistan, and my day job is an attorney, and I'm also chair of the dispute resolution body in Pakistan for CCTLDs. That's what I do. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Rob Hogarth with the ICANN staff. I'm a member of the policy team, and my day job this meeting is remote participation coordination. We're going to have a chat room set up for this event. I'm working on getting all that together right now, and so I hope you'll all join it, participate, and otherwise have a good meeting. Thank you.
Hello, my name's Chris Chaplow. I'm a two-year rank and file member of the business constituency. I'm based in Andalusia in southern Spain. and I run a small business, a web portal called andalusia.com and a web design company. I used to be on the CCT, the Communications and Coordination Work Team, and I'm still hanging on the IRPTB, Interregister Transfer Policy Team. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. My name is Evelyn Rono. I am the chair of the ICT Sector Board within Kenya Private Sector Alliance. Now, the Kenya Private Sector Alliance is the one body, apex body, that helps associations that are ICT related to push on policy issues and anything that enables business, good business environment. But I do work for Kenya Data Networks, which is one of the Kenya's largest infrastructure cable provider. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. My name is Doris Ofisi. I work with the Computer Society of Kenya. It is an IT professional for IT profession. The society caters for IT in the country.
Morning, everyone. My name is Peto Lajo, Nurses Across the Border. I'm the Kenya representative. I'm a new fellow to ICANN meeting.
Good morning. Pastor Peter Somorabon, Executive President, Nurses Across the Borders, Nigeria. We're an end user, so this is our first time to ICANN meeting as a fellow. Thank you.
And before we go on, I'm just passing around two sheets, one from the back, one from the front, for your name, your affiliation, your email, if you're willing to provide it, and a question that says, are you new? If so, would you like more information?
Hi, my name is Chris Chimanga. I'm from Telkom South Africa, and if I'm here, it's more to, we partner with the incumbent company in DRC, which is Democratic Republic of Congo. And I'm here to look at all regulatory, all the business ISP that need to start in DRC. And we all the challenges that we do have. And I see this meeting as a place where I can gain more of knowledge in order to provide the DRC more support, and as well as my company in South Africa in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name's Samson. This is my first attendance. I'm an independent businessman, and I'm just keen on identifying business opportunities and networking.
My name is Jason Souter. I'm a Chief Financial Officer for Commercial Connect based in the States, and we were the original 2,000 round applicant for the .shop TLD, and we'll be reapplying in the upcoming round.
Okay. My name is Alain Bidron. I'm working with France Telecom. I'm responsible for numbering, naming, and addressing within the France Telecom group. I'm also involved with ETNO, which is the European Telecommunication Network Operators Association. ETNO is a member of BC, and I'm involved with IPCP also.
Scott McCormick from McCormick ICT International, background in cybersecurity and ICT development.
Thank you very much. I'm Olivier Muron. I'm with France Telecom Orange. France Telecom is the name of the company. Orange is the brand. And France Telecom is present in Europe and in the Middle East and in Africa, in Kenya particularly. And I think my colleague from Kenya will be there this afternoon for the ISPCP meeting. I am a member of ISPCP. And I've been following ICANN's matter and been involved in ICANN since the very beginning, since even before ICANN was created, because I co-chair a meeting in 98 about ICANN, about the building of ICANN, I mean, in Geneva, with John Postel and a few other people from the US government and European authorities.
My name is Aisha Hassan. I'm from the International Chamber of Commerce, which is based in Paris. We're a business membership organization. ICC belongs to the business constituency, but we also have member companies and associations that belong to many of the other commercial interest constituencies within ICANN. I manage ICC's work developing policy and practice tools on a range of internet and ICT issues. I also manage ICC's BASIS initiative, which contributes to all of the activities that were formed by the UN World Summit on the Information Society, including the Internet Governance Forum. I also wanted to just say that we have 120 national committees around the world, so the way that this organization works is we have members in all of these countries, and the Secretariat acts as a global level forum for companies and associations, and I'm happy to talk to any of you about that in more detail if you need to.
My name is Naomasa Maruyama from JPNIC. JPNIC is the Japan Network Information Center. We are the membership organization, and many of them are ISPs in Japan. And I belong to, in this ICANN GNSO structure, we belong to the ISP constituency. Now, we used to be the .jp registry. Now we are not. And currently we are running the IP address registry for Japan, that is the so-called National Internet Registry. And for the domain name issue, we think we have some roles in, from the public interest point of view. And so that is why I'm attending this GNSO ISP constituency.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ron Androff. I'm with my company is RNA Partners, a small business based in the United States, although I'm Canadian. Gold medal winners of the ice hockey.
Go Canada.
I wanted to say I'm also a member of the operating steering committee, which is responsible for the current generic name supporting organization restructuring, and also a member of the work team, which is the GNSO operations work team. 10 years or so with ICANN, and was the founder of the .travel top-level domain, and we are now looking to be an applicant for the .sport domain when the process opens. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Good morning. My name is Wolf Ulrich Knoben. I'm a German and from a German telecommunication company which is providing telecommunication networks in Europe and also in other countries. And I've been involved in ICANN since around 2.5 years. Still learning what's going on, and still surprised. But still still prepared for to work together with ICANN. So if I may, Marilyn, I would like to add just a comment. So I would like to see that this. Stakeholder group is going to work together in a more professional way in the future, because we are just starting. You should see that. So we used to have only the so-called cost constituencies meeting in the past, but we are just starting to cooperate more and more in this way. And I would like to discuss that point, if possible, also how to do that in the future.
Wolf, I'll just interject and say it'd be great to talk about it, and then we're going to put a price tag on it and ask ICANN for the support.
Good morning. I'm Steve DelBianco. I'm Executive Director of NetChoice. That's a coalition of trade associations doing e-commerce based in the United States, but we have some activity in Europe and Australia as well. I'm a member of the business constituency here at ICANN, where I'm the Vice Chair for Coordinating Policy, the new position, so I'm still trying to figure out how that works. Welcome to all of you. We met many of you Sunday night, and it's fantastic to have the participation of the local community. It's been better than at previous meetings, and I think it's a tribute to the way you guys have really weighed in and engaged today. Thank you all, and welcome.
Well, my name is Jamie Wagner. I'm from Brazil. I am also with Wolf, sitting at the council. I'm relatively new to the ICANN structure. My first ICANN meeting was 2 years ago in France, in Paris. And, well, I'm still learning as with both. In Brazil, I have a seat. I represent the ISPs. I own an ISP company. I have also two other companies. I'm the president of two other companies. And I represent the ISP private sector on the CGIBR.BR, that is the steering committee for the .BR. And we have a kind of a multi-stakeholder structure. And I represent the ISPs. Well, that's it.
Thank you. And we have some newcomers.
Check 1, 2. Cool. Practicing for tonight, music night. My name is Barry Cobb. I'm also a member of
Barry,
the...
Barry, hold on just a minute. We have seats right up here. Is that okay? Hi, Bo. Sorry, Barry. Go ahead. I just want to get our folks seated here.
Okay, so yes, Barry Cobb, member of the business constituency, or I should say the CBU, commercial and business users, so that we start getting that right. This is basically my first year at ICANN, or first year anniversary at ICANN, Mexico City being my first. And I have my own small business that does domain portfolio management and consulting.
Hi, I'm Martin Sutton from HSBC. I'm a member of the business constituency. I'm actually based in HSBC's head office in a fraud function. I've been coming to ICANN since Paris, and I'm starting to refer to meetings under place names, so I think I've been ICANN'd. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Meoli Kashorda, and I'm the executive director of the Kenya Education Network. It's the research and education network of Kenya. Yeah, so we provide internet services to universities and higher education in not-for-profit manner, but in a commercial fashion.
We have, I think, one more new arrival here.
My name is
This is J. Scott Evans, Faisal Shah, and Fred Feldman.
Terrific. Let me go to one more person in the room, and then I'm going to go to the bridge and welcome you guys in the bridge. But hold on a minute. Yes, one more.
Thank you. My name is Akin Maimura from JPNIC. JPNIC is the one IP address management administering body, and also the could be regarded as the association of the ISPs. So that's why we are in the ISP.
Great. So we're going to go to the microphone. I see our first speakers here, and I'll introduce him in just a moment. Other than our speaker in the room, is there anyone who hasn't introduced themselves in the back there?
Mary Jo Kuklar. I represent Name Administration in the business constituency.
Great. Let me go to the mic. Whoops, one more.
Sorry, good morning. Brian Beckham from World Intellectual Property Organization.
Brian, welcome. Let me go to the microphone. I'll start off by apologizing, guys. We were working off the public agenda, which gave us our room and the ability to start at 10:30, but the staff, unfortunately, were given a different time. So we're making do by getting very well acquainted here. So next time everyone's together face-to-face, we're going to have a leg up on all you guys by knowing the folks in the room here. So let me go to the microphone and ask you guys to introduce yourself, give your name and affiliation, and which of the industry groups that you're a part of, and try to do it in about 10 to 20 seconds. And I heard Faisal Shah and Fred Feldman from Mark Monitor. Is that right?
That's correct, and we also have Jay Scott here.
Great, Jay Scott, and let's keep going with the attendance on the phone.
This is Mikey O'Connor in Reston, and we've got a couple more folks here. Just to do the introduction thing, I'm Mike O'Connor. I've been in the CBUC for about 5 years. We're getting a little echo. I apologize. I'll get that fixed in a minute. Anyway, anyway, let me pass the mic around here in Reston and then back to you, Marilyn.
Hey, Marilyn. Fabricio Vira, Time Warner. My first ICANN meeting was Mexico.
Fabricio, welcome.
Hi, this is Ching Chiao. I'm from Dot Asia and Registry Stakeholder Groups. My first meeting is way back to 2001 in Marina Del Rey. Hi.
Hi. Anyone else on the phone?
Hello, this is Jarkko Ruska from Nokia.
Hi.
Member of the
I'm going to ask those of you on the phone, if you don't mind, we're going to have to ask you to stay on mute when you're not speaking. But I have one more request. Would you email your name, title, and I'll get your email in that way, to marilynskate@hotmail.com, and we'll add you into the attendance list when we do the minutes and show that you're part of our remote participation team. We'll be adding to that as we go throughout the day, I'm sure. Thank you very much for getting up at whatever ungodly hour that you're getting up at. And we're going to move ahead and start with our agenda, which I'll just run through very quickly. We have...
Steve Metallitz has joined.
Great, Steve. Welcome.
And Philip Shepard and Sonny Bustles has joined.
Hi, Philip. Okay. Philip is with the business constituency, and Steve Metallitz is with the intellectual property constituency. We have a full room here, and we're moving a little bit late into our agenda, so we'll get started. We've invited Bo Brendler, and I might ask him to come up here and join me. We've invited Bo Brendler to come and give an update to the cross-constituency group on a new pending constituency application, which is in the House that our stakeholder group is in on the non-commercial side of the House. So he's going to give us a quick update. Our meeting is open. Everyone is welcome, but we are dealing only with positions and statements that are from the business user perspective. So welcome to anyone who's here as an observer from the other stakeholder groups, et cetera. But just understand that the topic focus we're going to take is from the commercial stakeholder group.
Good morning. Anybody here? Good morning, everybody. Thank you for inviting me here today. I did not prepare a PowerPoint or presentation because I was hoping that this could be more like a conversation or discussion. So many of these meetings at ICANN are people on daises and people on podiums and acronyms and things like that. So, in fact, it was... interesting, during the opening ceremonies, I was sitting there kind of having a flashback moment. I've been doing this for about 3 years now. I was elected to the at-large 3 years ago. And I remember sitting in some of these meetings, and actually the first meeting, ICANN meeting I went to was in San Juan. And to ICANN's credit, I think at the time, they really wanted to hear voices from the consumer universe. And when I say consumer, that's kind of a difficult word to define, but what I mean it as is, if any of you are familiar with the organization Consumers Union in the United States, I worked there for about 8 years. Other countries have consumer organizations that generally are involved in not so much protesting or things like that, although they do that, but they're really involved in assisting people in making decisions about what to buy and, you know, which person to buy it from and competitive pricing. Sorry about the popping there. Let me move this back. Competitive pricing and other things that that are of interest not only to consumers but to business. So some people look at consumer organizations and see them as sort of leftist, but they're not necessarily that. Oftentimes they are more establishing standards for business in certain ways. So anyway, I was sitting there during the opening presentation and thinking, when I first came to San Juan, I was asked to join a whole bunch of panels. And so for my very first ICANN meeting, I was sitting there, and I was supposed to talk about the RAA. And I didn't even know what the RAA was. So I put together all of these slides just sort of talking about, hi, I'm, you know, from New York, and I mean, just kind of. And so I had to throw all those slides away right at the beginning. An attempt to make some common sense comments about what the RAA was. So having, Yeah, having winged that with about 30 seconds experience, I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that that's where the consumer constituency kind of came from, is that consumer organizations generally have a lot of stuff on their plates. They don't have a lot of time. So we wanted to try to form the consumer constituency out of that experience. In other words, try to define a world and a set of issues that wouldn't require everyone to sort of sit and get, have to take, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks of a learning curve to try to become familiar with issues and concerns. So that's really how the consumer constituency was born, or at least the idea for it, and I guess there have been consumer constituencies proposed previously here at ICANN, one I think several years ago that I don't know anything about. But the issue remains that there's so much going on here. There's so many things we have to keep on top of and learn, and when you're in the at-large, which I'm also a part of, the mandate is to observe ICANN and comment on it from a whole different range of things, from the budget to literally every policy decision it undergoes. So no consumer organization is going to have time to do that, and that's why we get the consumer constituency going. So Marilyn asked me to give you an update. One of the reasons I'm a little bit scattered this morning is literally just before I came here, I was told that the board is apparently meeting with the NCUC, which has decided to, I guess, create or form a consumer organization within itself. Anyway, there's a lot of political negotiating going on, or a lot of political jockeying that I truly don't necessarily understand. So we can talk about that more as the morning goes. But you can't hear me? I'm going too fast. I guess what I would like to say in terms of an update is that we submitted a petition, and this is all available in the public comments area if anybody wants the URL. And the board has not been doing anything with it for about a year. A public comment period was opened up about 9 months ago. Not too many public comments were made. Then the board decided that of the four applicants for new constituencies to the GNSO, it would rule out three of them and not make a decision on ours, the consumer constituency, pending another public comment period. So we just had another public comment period. It ended February 17th. There's about an equal balance of opinions in there as to whether a consumer's constituency is a good idea or not. And so we are waiting, hopefully sometime during this meeting here in Nairobi, to hear from the board as to whether or not it has been approved. We have a board-appointed GNSO representative, Rosemary Sinclair, who has made a very strong statement for that we should be allowed to go ahead. But what remains, I think, holding everything up is that it's not clear what this constituency would do within or given the existing NCSG. So I assume that that is getting resolved at a meeting that's supposed to be taking place right now. So I'm kind of up in the air as to where that's all supposed to be. So literally, I suppose I could say the interesting note is that the future of the consumer constituency may be being decided literally as we're sitting here. So Marilyn, if you want to give me pointers as to what are more appropriate or interesting things to talk about, I'd be happy to do that.
So a couple of things. I think we may be giving out new folks, but let me put a couple of points on the table and then go to some of our members who have actually written comments in support of establishing a consumer's constituency. So just to kind of re-explain this a bit, constituencies are really sort of birds of feather groups. We might think of them that way. They're people who share a common set of interest in how they look at ICANN. So it's kind of easy to understand ISPs, connectivity providers, this is how they look at ICANN. There's two parts of the non-contracted party house. And one part is the commercial stakeholders, and the other part is the non-commercial. The idea that has come up is establishing within that non-commercial side of the house a group that would focus kind of on the perspective of how consumers are affected by decisions that ICANN makes. So just as we are business users, consumers, as we all know, because they're our customers, they have different perspectives than we do as business. And they don't look at things in the same way that we do as a supplier of a good or a service. They're very important to us, but they need their own identity. And that was the purpose, I think, Bo, on your, with your long experience in working in this space, and my previous experience when I was at AT&T of working with consumer groups, your idea was to aggregate the interest of those kinds of groups around the world and give them a voice within the non-commercial stakeholder group. So we have some members who have spoken in support of that, and I think Philip Shepherd, if I recall, you're one of them.
Marilyn, yes, indeed. I thought that the whole concept behind the restructuring of the GNSO had been a greater commonality between users in general and therefore, in particular, organizations like the one that represents seems to be precisely the sort of organization that we should be working closer with.
Anyone else? Steve Metallitz or anyone else on the phone want to comment?
This is Steve Metallitz. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I would second some of what Philip said. Although we haven't filed any formal comments, I think there would be general support within the IPC for the formation of a consumer's constituency. And I know Bo has made a has been very active and made a big contribution in the past. So we're definitely supportive of this idea.
Okay, I'm going to go to the ISPs and ask Tony or Wolf to speak on that. Tony, do you? We have a microphone right up here. We could.
I believe from what we've been discussing that we too would be supportive of this new constituency.
And can I just clarify that what we are talking about is a unique constituency in the non-commercial house? We're not talking about a subgroup of the existing NCUC. Is that right? That, in terms of our support.
That would be our understanding.
Okay. So, Bo, did you have a question for us?
Well, yes, I do, actually, and I appreciate Philip's brief comments and Steve's and yours also. Yes, I think perhaps more than any other time, literally right to the very minute of this day, regards what's going on elsewhere here, we would like to have your support, and we would like you to voice it in whatever appropriate ways you think. To sort of respond to your question briefly, I think there's some up-in-the-air discussion, or there has been for some time, whether this would be a unique constituency, as you describe it, or whether it would fit into the NCSG. I don't think that's been decided. I think it would be preferable, as you describe it, in fact, but that has not necessarily been, that has not come out in discussion as being a possibility. So I hope it is, but does that make sense?
Okay, so I'm going to take one final question on this, if anyone has one for Bo. And then I'm going to propose that in the constituencies this afternoon, we each talk about a brief written statement of support for the creation of the consumer constituency as a separate entity within the non-commercial house. That'll be a topic on the agendas this afternoon. Anything else that we need to ask Bo about before we move on? Bo, thank you.
Well, thank you. That was much more painless than I thought it would be, and I apologize for my rambling at the beginning. So,
and do feel free to share the information with the ICANN staff or any board members that this topic has come up and will be on our agenda and that it sounded very positive.
I very much appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Let me see if I can grab Rob Hogarth. Rob, thank you. Hold on just 1 minute, Jamie. Rob is going to join us, but he's going to speak from the back of the room, I think, because he's doing double duty for us. And I'll let him introduce himself. I've asked him to talk about GNSO improvements, and the topic of restructuring probably just fits right into that. Before we go to Rob, Jamie has a question.
think my question will introduce Rob's answer. It's about the who, besides the consumers' constituency, do we have any other constituency in the non-commercial stakeholder group, or is anybody applying for it?
So Rob is going to talk to us overall about the status of restructuring, including the toolkit, which is something that's very important. I want him to explain. But, of course, this is a pressing question on our minds before we go to that. Thanks.
Certainly. You'd like me to answer Jamie's question first and then give you an overview? The concept of new constituencies is one that's still very ripe and fertile in terms of discussion, Jamie. You may recall that the Board Governance Committee's recommendations for GNSO improvements included this new concept of stakeholder groups, introducing the structure that you are all now participating in. It also said, in order to maximize participation, the board wanted to make it easier to form new constituencies in the GNSO. And staff was instructed to create an initial process to provide means and processes for that sort of activity. At present, we have had a total of 5 proposals for new constituencies come in to the board, or at least to be announced among the community. Well, there was one in the registries stakeholder group. There was one that sort of overlapped a number of them. The registries stakeholder group had an application by the city TLDs. The IDNG TLD proposal came in, and that was kind of hard to determine exactly where it would fit. See, you know, whether that's a CSG or another stakeholder group. And yes, the others, cyber safety, the consumers, and now just within the last couple of days, a public internet access constituency, have all come forward, primarily in the NCSG, in that arena. I sort of started the overview. Before I do that, though, I want to welcome our remote participants who have been very helpful on the chat in terms of sound system and things like that. Marilyn, I think you just moved something, so that's creating a little interference. Maybe the laptop. No, I'm gone. Thank you. So let me give you a general overview. As I had suggested in answering Jamie's question, the board essentially created a new structure for the GNSO, and the concept was 4 new stakeholder groups. And within that was the commercial stakeholder group structure. The board just late last year approved the charters for all 4 stakeholder groups, permanent charters on the contracted party side of the GNSO, and transitional or temporary charters on the non-contracted side of the GNSO. The non-contracted side of the GNSO involves both the commercial stakeholder group, you guys, and the non-commercial stakeholders group. And what the board has asked is that the commercial stakeholders group and the non-commercial stakeholders group work within their communities and establish permanent charter documents within a year, so essentially by the Latin America ICANN meeting. So that's something that should be on the agenda for this group going forward, and you know, dialogue within your own community with members of the board, I think, will be useful in giving you ideas about how to accomplish that. You already worked pretty well on establishing a temporary transitional charter that acknowledged the 3 existing constituencies, and I think you benefited from the fact that 3 constituencies were nice and easily divisible into 6. So right now, each of the constituencies has 2 members on the council. But from a very technical standpoint, council representation within the concept of new GNSO improvements isn't necessarily tied to constituencies. So you guys could come up with alternative mechanisms moving forward, and I would imagine that potential new constituencies could affect your discussions, or at least should be something that you contemplate or keep in mind. Now, I'd like to point out that the non-commercial stakeholders group because, you know, as Beau noted, there's a lot more activity in that community. They've moved much more proactively in terms of working on a permanent stakeholder group charter. And so you may find opportunities to learn from what they're doing, positively or negatively, but certainly opportunities to see how they're trying to structure themselves, what sort of feedback they're getting from the board. And so I hope ultimately that'll be a productive process. Going forward farther into the future, there's still a lot of work being done by work teams that have been created by the GNSO to fulfill some other aspects of the GNSO improvements process. Those are much more focused on revising the policy development process, establishing a working group model for policy development, and a number of the members of this stakeholder group are participating in those work teams. And I'm hopeful that, you know, they're tracking back and communicating to all of you what those discussions are, how they're proceeding with some of the recommendations they'll be providing to the council. Because I think one of the important things that you'll need to consider is what is the role of constituencies when you've got a working group model of policy development? What's the role of the CSG, of stakeholder groups in that effort as well? So there are a lot of things that are still works in progress. Certainly areas that contributions from this stakeholder group and from your individual constituencies would be extremely useful in. So I know, continue to provide support for those work team efforts, and we'll see sort of where those things go. One other important aspect that I wanted to mention, because I'm looking at Chris Chaplow right in front of me here, is that one of the work teams is a communications work team that's been working very hard on recommendations with respect to the GNSO website. There's a lot of great learning that's gone on there. And I think you all as a stakeholder group may see some advantages there. The other piece is a final work team that's looking at the role and structure operations of constituencies and stakeholder groups. And each of the constituencies in the commercial stakeholder group currently have representatives on that team. The important thing there is that that team has confirmed an inventory for a toolkit of administrative services that staff is looking into finding realistic ways to provide given staffing and budget issues. And there will be, I think, useful input that comes out of the work team effort that ultimately the council will be looking at that will ultimately have an impact on your individual constituencies or on the stakeholder group charters, because there will be recommendations for best practices, operations, all with an eye toward creating a level playing field for community members regardless of the constituency in which they're working. So it's a lot of work. What I've given you is a very brief overview, Marilyn, and I'd be delighted to respond to specific questions, particular details, whether they involve this stakeholder group, your constituency, or anybody else. Can you just say 1, 2, 3?
I could say 1, 2, 3.
Thank you.
As long as we don't go above 10, I can probably handle it.
Sometimes you have to count to 10.
Oh. Bob and I have known each other for many years. I think it's been in many meetings when I've needed to count to 10. Bob, I'm going to put a couple of questions on the table, but before you answer questions, I'd like to take a roundup of questions because I think there'll be similarity. So what I'd like to focus on is a specific discussion about the importance of finishing the toolkit and why the toolkit is so essential to, in particular, the House, that is both the non-commercial stakeholder side of the House and the commercial side of the House. So I'd like to talk more about the toolkit and its importance and how it can help us to ensure that we are able to do our job in doing outreach and participation with our community, We have many new people here, and we're intent on continuing that. That's a placeholder to come back to. Let me go to the microphone and take other questions for you, to the bridge and take other questions for you, and then we'll go to the room for questions and then turn it back to you. So on the phone. Steve, are you monitoring the chat? No hands are up. Okay. We don't hear questions from the conference. We don't hear questions from the conference bridge. Does anyone want to ask a question of Rob about his restructuring comments?
This is Steve Metalis. Can you hear me? I had a question.
Yes, Steve. Please go ahead.
It's really just when the toolkit services will be available to constituencies. What's the expected timetable and what's going to be rolled out?
Great. So we're adding to that stack of issues for Rob to elaborate on. Are there any other questions for Rob? I do have one, Rob, and I'll just put it out as a placeholder. This is a CSG meeting. Folks, if you're on the conference bridge and you're not speaking, apologies, but we need for you to mute. In relation to charter development, this is a CSG meeting. The CSG Executive Committee, who are either in the room or on the phone, will be talking about a process by which we move to develop the final charter and then, of course, circulate it, take broader feedback, et cetera. Are we going to be able to turn to you or to Ken Bauer and ask you to be present at our working sessions if we decide that's needed and look to you for other kinds of support and input as we go through that charter development process should we decide that that is needed? So that's my second question. And let me turn it over to you.
When I finish answering your second question, maybe you can repeat your first question. Yes, I mean, the board and certainly staff contemplated that at every stage of this process, we'd be delighted to offer support and whatever guidance you think would be useful in terms of reviewing what the board has asked you to do and supporting your efforts in that way. Whether that's here or remotely later, I'd only point out that one of the challenges, of course, we have here in Nairobi is that we have much fewer staff. Ken is not here. I'm here physically, but not continuously.
No worries. We're talking future, but not too far future.
We'd be delighted.
Okay, so you know, expect for the executive committee to talk about it and come back to you. The question that I asked was about the toolkit, and Steve added a question about the toolkit.
In terms of that bucket of questions about the toolkit, the council has approved the list of potential services for a toolkit. I apologize, I can't rattle off the list of 12 right now, but essentially they are in-kind administrative services, telephone conference bridges, chat rooms, wiki resources. They also include substantive policy support. They could include other secretariat-like functions, a real combination of things. What the board basically did, what the GNSO Council did was to say, staff, here's now our list. Now you all go look back and see how much it cost, what are the challenges of providing them, and then come back to us with a plan that sort of outlines what you can offer and when. And so this addresses your question, Steve. Right now, Julie Hedlund and I are conducting that background research, finding out how much conference calls cost, what does website support cost, and what I envision and what our plan has been is that by the Brussels meeting, we'd have the full menu of services and concepts of costs that then we could all get feedback from you as individual constituencies or as stakeholder groups to say, let's take that as a whole package approach, or let's look at it as a set of menu options. The challenge we've got is we want to make sure that we're able to provide what we commit to. We don't want to set up a situation where you're calling and having expectations and we can't meet that. you know, there are a number of interesting observations, and there may be cost-saving mechanisms that you all are familiar with that can help us offer more services sooner. Yes, Marilyn.
At least for the business constituency, we have a history, we have a process, we know what we need, we can tell you what we need, and we know how much we've been paying for it. We know what else we need besides that. So how soon do you need that kind of information from us?
That information at your earliest convenience would be extremely helpful, because we may be able to look at that and see that it costs the business constituency X, but when we scale up a service and we're providing it to six, it's actually X minus or some smaller factor, and that would help. So even individual bits of information would be very useful in that regard.
Well, I'm going to turn to the other two constituencies, but I'm first going to say that the other approach you might take is to take an interim approach where you provide some initial services so that people can be functional, and then you learn from that before you, you know, add on other kinds of services. But to Steve's question about timing, this is an important question for all of us. When can we get started? Because if we're going to have to wait for a complete evaluation and for staff to do research on capabilities with no numbers or projected numbers of the number of calls, et cetera, I think we would be looking at 2012, and that's too far.
Yeah, I mean, you have to recognize that already, and I've talked with Glenn about this, those of you who are chairs or others know that Glenn already provides a significant number of basic foundational services. You've got bridges. Depending on the constituency, you're either very smooth at getting that done or others require a little bit more effort. And part of that is trying to determine, it's great if we have a fixed number of constituencies, but that's not what the board contemplated. So if we're going to start to roll out something and all of a sudden we've got 9 constituencies or 12 constituencies, how do we manage and process that? I think the real key there is that there be a dialogue so that we're getting this type of feedback, Marilyn, where you know, somebody from the ISPs or the IPC would just come in and say, no, we've done it much cheaper, either through some other vendor or some other system. And we may find ways that through combining resources, we can get significantly lower costs. I mean, I've just looked at other committees within ICANN, and you can see some very chilling numbers, or you can see some real opportunities to be able to expand things. And the bottom line from our perspective is we want to have the services available as soon as possible, minimize how much the ICANN costs are, and really allow you to fully develop and participate in the policy development process, focus on the substantive aspect of that without having to worry about a lot of the logistics. The one thing that I think would be useful, and you all may do this in your individual constituencies now, is if we can have a target or a point person that might be able to help us or give us advice. You know, we could create a list and just have you know, a team that can give us those resources or that we can bounce ideas off of. That would be extremely helpful. I don't know if that leadership position exists or if someone in individual constituency meeting can just say, sure, I'll do that.
So I'm going to go to Steve, but I think for each of our constituencies, we can talk about this in our afternoon meetings. It shouldn't be hard for us to, at least in the BC, we have some historical information, and we can tap a couple of willing members and ask them to work on this, I think. So let me go to Steve, though, about the IPC and their ability to provide this kind of information.
Is that we should look at that list of that exists now and kind of tell you which of these we think we want and whatever we can we want that we want ICANN to provide and whatever we can give you either about you know how much we would need or what we've been paying for it in the past or how we've been procuring it in the past would be useful rather than just waiting until Brussels for you to come forward with your detailed menu. Is that correct?
That would be useful, Steve. In the recommendations from the work team, they did prioritize the issues from the perspective of, you know, the responses to a variety of community surveys that went out. So they aren't a priority list, but it would be very useful to hear, for example, if the BC were to come back and say, you know, our critical one is eighth down on the priority list. What can we do about that? And getting that individual feedback, we may find some more commonality. As we all know, until you begin to focus on the details, sometimes you just agree to certain rankings that may no longer be applicable. So, yeah, if you can be providing us that information, Steve, that would be very helpful. And I'd say, I mean, if you guys can do that here in Nairobi, just identifying the point people, we could be having a conference call or certainly have our email list together and be starting the dialogue within the next 10 days to 2 weeks and really get the process moving. I think once we have that working group, that'll drive things much more quickly.
Okay, I'm going to wrap this up unless somebody has one more question for Rob, because we have our next executive support person with us on our next topic. Marco Lorenzo has come to respond to questions from us at our urgent request. We're running a little bit late, but so we're going to try to get back on track. Is there one final question for Rob?
And I've also checked the chat room to see if there were any questions, and there are not at the moment.
I'll just wrap up by saying that in the BC, we do charge dues, and we have in the past been paying for a secretariat, and that's been what consumes our dues. Looking ahead, our goal is to be able to utilize the toolkit services from ICANN and to take the money from our dues and to do business outreach and support participation. So we have an objective that is driven from our interest of broadening and deepening business participation. So we're very motivated to work together, Rob, to help begin to identify that. I'm going to move to the next topic, if I might. And the topic is going to be introduced, and then we're going to go to Wolf Ulrich, who will be sort of the lead on discussing this topic. And we have, as a resource person who's only with us for a few minutes, Marco Lorenzo, very important for us. And Marco, thank you very much for joining us. If I can, Wolf, just ask you to tee up, I think we took your microphone. You want to come up here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So let me do this. Let me ask Marco to just tee up very quickly what the topic is, but then we need to go to the process, and Wolf will lead on the discussion of some questions with you. So just explain
what we are. Make the full story a bit shorter. We closed the day before yesterday the call for applications, so we got 24 applications for the first review team, so accountability, transparency. All the applications have been sent to the different supporting organizations or advisory committees for endorsement, as this is precisely what requested by the affirmation of commitment, so the review teams must be made up by individual volunteer members of the community in representation of the relevant supporting organizations and advisory committees. GNSO, as any other supporting organization advisory committee, has till the 17th of March to inform us with an email of the candidates that retains for support. Then the selectors will make their final choice on the size and composition of the review teams. The selection has to be made pretty quickly. I don't know if you all were present to the session yesterday. We are about 1 month late in the original envisaged schedule. This is due to the fact that we had to extend the time for applications in order to get more candidates for the review teams. So we had to hit a deadline of March, by the end of March, to have the review teams in place in order them to start their work as soon as possible. There are no intermediate deadlines spelled out in the affirmation of commitments. This is because the review teams will have to decide their methodology and time planning. There is just one important deadline that cannot be missed, which is end of this year, 31st of December, for the delivery of the final report. Final report, which has already to include the addressing of the comments that will be received to the report itself. So in the plan that I put on the initial discussion paper, I imagine that the review team would need to publish their draft final report in October in order to allow sufficient time for consultation and for addressing the comments from community before delivering the final version of the report.
Yeah, thank you, Marco. To brief you on the overall process, so which Marco just explained, so you understood that under this overall process, the different SOs, the supporting organizations, have established some processes how to nominate their candidates to that review teams, and the GNSO as well. Did some work on that and established a process which I'm just going through a little bit. The one is the content of that, the process is there, the other one is the timeline. And that leads then to two main questions to Marco. That is, so the GNSO Council decided, well, to the GNSO shall be given either one or two or maybe more, I don't know exactly, slots, which could be for the review teams. So we decided, okay, let's just wait for the applications and then find out six nominees, which should be forwarded then to Marco and to the evaluators. As Marco pointed out, we have on the GNSO side, we now have 12 nomination applications for that. So we have to find out to nominate six of them. So the process goes down from the council, from the GNSO up down to the stakeholder groups. And within the stakeholder groups, we have been, we are going to allocate six nominations to from the stakeholder group in the GNSO in total. That means each stakeholder group could allocate at least one fixed nominee to that six slots. And that means the registrars, registries, the CSG, and the non-commercial stakeholder group shall appoint one person. So we have then four fixed, and two are left. And these two left slots are allocated one to the non-affiliated applications. So if you have somebody, some application in the GNSO which is not affiliated to any of the stakeholder groups, it should come through that channel. And the last one, the sixth slot, is open for all applications. So that's what we are doing, and what we need advice on council level from the SG right now, how to deal with that slot, and the SG has at first to decide upon their candidate, the fixed candidate, and in addition to the to nominate two persons as competitive for the last slot. So that's to the process. To the timeline, it means the council has fixed for themselves a meeting for 16th of March next week in order to cope with your deadline you have set on the 17th. However, I had a talk to Yanis this morning and asked him, because there was some confusion yesterday, and he acknowledged that from his point of view, it's not that fixed at the time. The time being, whether, for example, Yanis and Peter shall have a discussion upon before the 17th. So that's what I'd like to ask you really here. Is this deadline really fixed? So that means that when the council comes up on the 17th with its nomination, these nominations are taken into consideration really as the council is bringing that forward to you. Yes, that's it at the time being. Yes, it's a question to Marco. Yes.
Well, also yesterday in the public meeting, both Peter and Yanis confirmed that they are going to consider only those candidatures that you are going to endorse. And this was confirmed publicly at the public meeting. So I don't think there are ambiguities on this point. No, I say it was confirmed at the public meeting that the selectors will take into consideration only those candidates that will be endorsed by the different supporting organizations. And I think that was crystal clear.
That was my second question, because...
Okay.
So that means that 6 of the 12 we have in our pool shall be not taken into consideration. Because, okay...
I'm sorry. Say that again.
So that means, the process is that, the genus is always going to put forward 6 nominations out of the 12 applications to bring it forward to the selectors. And the rest of these applications, which are not taken into consideration or not nominated, are not be taken into consideration by the selectors. That's it.
This is the rationale of the process.
Yes.
Yeah.
Steve Metalitz has his hand up and wants to speak. Let me see if... let me see if... So the things we needed to confirm is only those who have volunteered, whose names come forward with an endorsement, are going to be considered. So that's an important point for us. The second point we need to clarify is there's been significant community input saying that the number of 6 to 8 is not adequate and explaining the community's views on why that is. There seemed to be receptivity from the two selectors yesterday on that they were listening to the community's input. But my question to you is, regardless of whether it's 8 or it's 12 or it's 15, do the 3 pre-designated slots count in that total number? Pre-designated being chair of the board, Peter Dengate Thrush, chair of the GAC or his designee, and Larry Strickling, the head of the NTIA.
I think the comments I'm trying to reconstruct based on the public comments that we get. The comments were focusing, I think, on the overall number, so on the overall size of the team. This is my recollection from the different inputs we had from community. Then, once again, the decision of the press size and the composition of the review teams is completely up to selectors. But the comments that we got that were unanimous in asking for a larger size for the review teams proposed different architectures, different geometries, different compositions, but all of them made reference to the overall size of the review teams.
Secondly, the review team, once appointed, has the ability to add experts.
Also the experts, also the independent experts, have to be selected by selectors. There is no precise indication in the affirmation of commitments on two key issues, which are number and areas of expertise. Right?
Okay.
On those two elements, we had some interesting inputs from the public discussion, from the public comment. On areas of expertise, we had comments, for instance, suggesting that expertise such as corporate governance, accountability, and others have to be considered when selecting the independent experts. And on number, we have a couple of suggestions that imagine that a number... nobody gave a precise number for independent experts, but a few people were concerned about the balance between members coming from supporting organizations and independent experts, and some suggested to have not just one independent expert, but a bit more than one, like 2-3 within the team in order to provide areas of expertise which are needed in order to conclude on the mandate of the review teams. There is another element I would like to underline, which is the independent expert as well are part of the review team, right? So they are not they're not on top of the review teams, but they are members of the review team as well as also the members of the community. If you read the text of the affirmation of commitment.
So that could mean, process-wise, the selectors get X number of names. We know that there are three names from the GAC. This is public information. We know there are three names from the GAC, one from the CCNSO, some number yet to be determined from the ALAC, six from the GNSO, and some number from the ASO. And I apologize, Marco, I don't remember if the ASO has already submitted.
There has been a late submission by ASO.
Okay.
And they submitted a few hours after the deadline. So the issue now is to be discussed whether this candidature, in any case, was submitted late because of constraints. So
right.
A few hours of delays can happen.
Right.
In this case, what to do with
right.
if an exception, for instance, can be acceptable or not. So
okay. So I need to move this along. We have like four more minutes for questions, and then we have a very quick introduction to do of another staff person who I asked to stop in, so you would at least get to meet one of the other new staff people. And then Doug Brent will be here. So I would say we'll have probably 5 minutes.
No, let me just add the very last comment. Really, it's really important for us. Well, our deadline, the council deadline. So, in case if you have any talks with Peter and Janis about that, so please make them sensible about that. Yeah, because I wouldn't be let me say blackmailed here within the CSG. Turning them to that date. And then. It turns out that this process is really jeopardized by any other action. Yeah.
Well, and once more, thanks again for the dialogue we had in fixing the deadlines and the process and so on and so forth in such a rush and sometimes even chaotic way. So we managed, we did it.
Okay.
Fine. It has been written. Supporting organizations, that's been written to advisory committees. You have until the 17th of March to send your endorsement.
Right.
I think
just a minute.
It's clear. And if there is need to discuss this even further, no problem at all. But the deadline has been already agreed with you, 17th of March for. Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Well, we have Aisha with a question, and then I want to go back to the microphone. Sorry, to the conference bridge to make sure as a last roundup, Aisha.
Thank you. Marco, yesterday during the open discussion, Peter welcomed the idea of ideas for independent experts. Do you know if they're going to announce a specific call and a deadline so that those experts would be announced when the whole review team is announced? Or do you know how that's going to work, or is that something you can find out for us?
I surely can find out this for you. And what I noticed yesterday is that they were very, very open to the comment made by several participators to the public comment to give the possibility to the community to propose names for independent experts. And this was something that was made yesterday by their trauma, but also stated pretty clearly, at least by GNSO and ALEC, also others supported the same idea. So the possibility for community to propose names to be considered.
Thank you. I think it'll be helpful for us to know the deadlines and the process going forward. Thanks.
Okay.
Just a point of clarification, just so that everyone understands this, because in your afternoon meetings, you need to discuss this. There is an opportunity for each of these constituencies or for the CSG to nominate independent experts. So that's why the timing is important, and we'll take further discussion at a later time. I'm going to wrap this up, and as Doug is coming up here to join us, I'm going to ask Barbara, if she doesn't mind, to also – Barbara, are you still in here? Can you come up here just so we can introduce you, so people can see you, so they know to waylay you later in the hall?
Grab me anytime they see me, yes.
While Doug is getting seated here, okay. Barbara's going to introduce herself.
Okay, yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Barbara Clay. I have just been appointed Vice President for Marketing and Communications for ICANN. I haven't actually joined yet. I'm here in a more informal capacity and join on April 1st. I do have a long background in communications, but I don't have a background in these issues, and so I'm on a rather steep learning curve. And to that extent, I ask everyone's indulgence, and I ask lots of stupid questions of you. I do hope to meet each and every one of you, if not in this round, then certainly in Brussels, because I see all of you as part of the ICANN community communications effort as well. So I would look forward to picking your brains and to hearing your views on a wide range of issues as I learn this job and join you in the ICANN community. Thank you.
Well, we should all offer you a welcome. I'm going to introduce Doug Brent, and Doug will be with us for the next 30 minutes, and then we'll be wrapping up very quickly. Let me just, before I do that, ask you to join me in a round of welcoming of appreciation applause to Marco for changing his schedule and coming to join us. Doug Brent is the COO of ICANN. Now, as someone who, of course, has been around since the internet was invented and since ICANN was invented, I remember how long it took us to get a COO, and we're really happy to have him.
Thank you very much, Marilyn.
Doug has a terrific amount of responsibility within ICANN and is a very critical player to all of us, because so much of what we care about that makes the organization run smoothly and therefore allows us to do our bottom-up policy development job and our participation in ICANN is supported by the work that Doug and his entire team does. So I asked Doug to come and talk to us about a particular set of issues. So when you're not going to get the full-blown scope of everything that Doug is responsible for, I ask him to focus, at the request of the other members of the CSG executive team, on the overarching issues related to the new GTLDs, with a particular focus on the economic study. So he may have other things he'd like to cover as well. I will mention to him that we're meeting with Kevin Wilson later today and have asked Kevin to bring his checkbook.
So that would be great.
Can you hear? Okay, I'll never touch it again. Can you hear me? Okay.
And sorry, Doug, we also have remote participants, and we have a fair number of people in Washington, D.C. at a highly unusual hour when they usually try to be sleeping, joining us, and a couple of folks from London and Europe.
You know, so welcome to the people at 6 a.m., or I guess earlier than that,
yeah.
4 a.m., sorry about that. And talking about working smoothly, just since the group is all here, I was at the breakfast this morning, which didn't work smoothly, and just want to let you know that when we went back and investigated, that both meetings got moved. The CSG breakfast got moved, and the competing CCNSO meeting next door to it got moved because of the president's arrival, which we learned of, I think, Friday. That had everybody move around. So my sincere apologies for that. I think everybody made the best of it, frankly, and I thought it was a very good event anyway. So I did come prepared with a couple of comments on the status of the economic study. And other than that, Marilyn, unless you tell me otherwise, I'll more just take questions.
Fantastic.
And comments. And it's not going to be a long set of – just really give you a status on where we are on this economic study.
A third of our members are guest and new.
Yes. So let me give a little background.
Decode,
yeah.
Overarching, yeah.
Thank you. So maybe without going to the full overarching issues piece, but happy to go there if you'd like. In terms of economic studies, the policy development and then the implementation work around new generic top-level domains has been going on literally for years at ICANN. Depends on how you count it. You might say 10 years. In the implementation work, which has been ongoing now for, I think, 3 years, One of the questions that has come up from many sources is, what's the economic analysis? What's the fundamental economic basis upon which ICANN is deciding that it's appropriate that these new GTLDs be issued? Even that question, I'll say to a certain extent, is controversial within the ICANN community because some feel there's demonstrated demand. So, there's been multiple views on this topic. There have been some economic studies done. Significant portions of the community felt those studies were inadequate. Based on that observation, the ICANN organization undertook to have additional economic studies done and have started a process late last year to really relook at all the economic studies done and then answer some specific questions. So is that good enough background? Then specifically, so we have a new set of economists working on this, and they have been since the early part of this year. And we defined a three-phase study, and I hope most of you are familiar with this notion of doing, these studies in three phases. The first one really was to survey all the work done to date, examine the arguments that have been made, examine the materials, because there has been quite a bit, documented, discussed, published. And that phase one, the date that I have for completion is 15th March. Based on my level of interaction with economists, I'd say March, maybe more than 15th of March. So I would think there might be a little slip in that date. And very clearly, ICANN will publish this information broadly. I think actually an interesting side discussion with some of you, maybe more the ICANN insiders, would be when ICANN works with consultants and has reports like this developed, what's the appropriate way to post and publish them? Because we're always sort of caught in this bind of publishing it right away, put some imprimatur of this is sort of valid or important. Waiting to publish it creates a conspiracy theory that it's being meddled with. So how we balance that, I think, is difficult. But we will publish this right away. The phase two study obviously may well be influenced by the answers to phase one. You'd sort of hope it would be. But the initial questions that we've outlined for this phase two are that they perform an empirical analysis of the proposed new market in TLDs to estimate cost of defensive registrations. So that's sort of one question. Second question is to develop a metric to assess whether the overall expected benefits outweigh the costs. And three, develop a process for assessing net economic consumer benefit or harm, with a focus on the harm, from individual applications. Those are the three questions, the three primary questions this phase two study are intended to answer. And again, though, we would all agree that if there's interesting items that come out of phase one, you'd hope that could be included in phase two as well. Maybe I'll just stop there. There is a phase three identified as well, but I think that's much more tentative based on what the results of one and two are, and that the timeline for this is that this information be published prior to the ICANN Brussels meeting. Certainly from an ICANN staff point of view, we have every interest to move this work along. At the same time, quality of the work has been such an issue that you'd hate for, there's really a relatively short amount of time between now and the Brussels meeting, especially if you take the 3 weeks, mm-hmm. if you move it forward 3 weeks for a posting deadline. Mm-hmm. So that's our goal and intention, and certainly the directive to the economists is to be ready in that time frame. But I will say, based on where we are today, I'm a little concerned about making that time frame. I don't think it would be horribly off. If it's off, it might be a month off. But that's the status, and that's what's going on there.
So I have a question, and then I want to turn to others. As you know, Doug, I worked on a response to one of the early economic position papers that ICANN had commissioned. The discussion topic put forward by myself and many others was that ICANN needed to do a broad economic analysis of the implications not just on studying demand for domain names, but the cost of the changes broadly on the organization. And not so much, I think, to stop the introduction of GTLDs, but to ensure it's done in the right way. So these studies that you're moving forward with, are they looking at those broader issues that have been called for by many in the community? I know Metallitz is on the phone, Fabricio's on the phone, Fred Fellman and others from Mark Monitor on the phone. There's been, the GAC has spoken on the need for this broader economic analysis. Mm-hmm. Is that being addressed in this process?
Well, I think, you know, that's really one of the reasons why we're doing this phase one, is to both look at the work that's been done and the questions that have been answered, and have sort of, you know, a person, you know, an entity brand new to this whole debate to be able to, you know, hopefully provide an unbiased assessment of how many of these questions have recently been answered, how many of them remain to be answered. And then I think some of the questions that I outlined, Marilyn, would specifically look at this broader, you know, sort of marketplace cost. So if you look at defensive registrations, mm-hmm. for example, mm-hmm. you know, that's something that hasn't really been a focus of any of the studies to date. I think when you talk about assessing overall expected benefits and costs, that again is a whole market kind of question. So until we see the results of this, it's hard to say, does it, you know, is it certainly going to address sure. the questions people have? But I think that's the intent.
I'm actually going to call on Fred. Fred, if you don't mind my putting you on the spot, or maybe Jay Scott, maybe both of you, Fabricio, the cost of managing a portfolio, Steve has his hand up, so Steve, you may want to respond. The cost of managing a portfolio is much broader than a defensive registration. So maybe we could hear from some of those expert folks about the question they might have related to that, as well as Steve, since you have your hand up, let's go to your question first and then go to that second question that I posed to you or others on the phone. Steve?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Doug, for that presentation. I guess my question was on the defensive registration issue, and I agree it would be good to get Fred's and Jay Scott's input here. But is the economist going to be sitting at a desk doing this theoretically, or is he going to be collecting empirical data from the entities that make the defensive registrations? In other words, should we be asking or preparing our members or identifying members of the IPC that the economist should talk to, or is this data going to come to him or her in some other way?
Good early morning, Steve.
Morning.
I don't really know the answer to that question, and I think I better have a better answer than that. But if you can accept that, I'll get back to you. You know, get back to the constituency via email with a specific answer to that question.
Get back to the CSG. I think it's a broad question.
Stakeholder group. Yes. Excuse me. I'm learning too.
Okay. I did have another question on the economic study, and Marilyn, I don't know whether you want me to bring that up now or. As long as I have the floor, why don't I do it?
Great.
And that is in phase two, item C, about trying to identify costs and benefits on an individual application basis. I think that's a reasonable paraphrase of what you said.
Yes.
This is. I wonder if you're swinging from one extreme to another here. Rather than talking about costs and benefits overall, you're now talking about it on an individual application by application basis. Why was that chosen rather than to use the word that I know your colleague Kirk Pritz dreads among all others, categorization of applications? Why wasn't it thought that it might be useful to see if you could identify which categories of applications would have a better or worse cost benefit prospect?
So, Steve, I think that's a really good question. Hold on one sec. I think that the notion in the second phase study is really to approach it both from the top down and the bottom up. So from the top...
Sorry, that was me.
Can everybody still hear me? From the top down, the idea is that if you looked at the second, you know, item two, develop a metric to assess whether overall expected benefits outweigh overall costs. And I think that that is an attempt, and certainly looking at the cost of defensive registrations, an attempt to maybe understand the market at a macro level. I think that there are some, and maybe not in this room so much, but there's some in other parts of ICANN, that are skeptical that it is going to be possible to, in the end, develop...
Sorry, guys, I'm
tangled
up
in the PowerPoint. For those online, just hold on 1 second. Okay, we're back again. So the idea is that could there be a way to look application by application or individual top-level domain that would help to, so that in the end, if you couldn't address this as a full market sort of theoretical issue, that you would also have the opportunity on sort of a micro level, application by application, to determine is there net harm to that application.
I understand that, but I was wondering why you apparently rejected the idea of looking at it category by category, rather than saying, gee, is a dot widget application going to be more harmful than helpful? What about talking about corporate TLDs or dot brand TLDs or, cultural linguistic TLDs, or you could come up with several different categories you might be able to make some meaningful statement about. I'm kind of concerned that the way this is, you're setting this up for failure. It's the likelihood that you'd be able to make a meaningful statement about every single application seems to be a much steeper climb than saying, gee, maybe we can identify which categories of top-level domains are most likely to actually satisfy need and minimize consumer harm. So I'm just wondering why that approach did not show up there.
Before Doug answers, I'm going to add on to Steve's question. I'm just envisioning of the process of evaluating each individual registry application, and then my question is, what is the criteria by which you're going to assess benefit versus harm? Versus, as Steve says, category or characteristics of registries. So, for instance, if a registry has no refuses to support the UDRP or, has warehousing going on, or if there's looseness to certain criteria that are shown to be needed in order to limit harm, but I'm. With Steve, I'm kind of wondering, A, what's the criteria to evaluate an individual application, and where does that come in the timeline of the process?
So, I certainly think a possible outcome of this item 3 is that it can't be defined as identified in the study. In other words, there may not be a possible mechanism to look at it application by application, just as some are saying that there may not be a model overall of looking at the economic, that you'll only end up with very general statements overall about the economic value of new TLDs or not. For example, if you accept the premise, which probably some people in this group don't, but if you accept the premise that there is some value in some TLDs, then you either go down the path that Steve is outlining, which is to say you identify categories, we then go to the problem of what really fits into a category or not, and say that classes of TLDs are good or bad. There's issues associated with doing that. And if that doesn't work, another possible approach that still tries to address this issue of creating consumer harm would be, could you decide through economic criteria whether which is really what we're asking them to do when we look at things like defensive registrations, sort of net costs and benefits, could you identify that on an application by application level? It may work. This is a question in the study, and the economists may come back and say there really is no meaningful mechanism to look application by application.
Steve,
I'll just say that I think you're asking the wrong question, right. And I don't think you're asking a question that the right. community wanted asked. The
exactly.
community talked about what are the ways to have to structure the scope and pace of the rollout in a way to maximize the benefits and minimize harm.
Right.
It didn't say anything about individual applications.
That's right.
So I'll mute at this point, though. Thank you.
Okay, so Steve, the other option would be we could just take that question off the table. But then the question is, it seems like we're limiting the result that we could get from this economic study.
I'm going to actually I'm going to go to Fred and Jay Scott if they want to ask a question, and then go to Steve. But before I do that, I'm actually going to propose, Doug, that we have more of a conversation about this, because I have to say, you know, two things. One, if you use the term defensive registrations, and that is narrowly defined, and all that is the cost of actually making the actual defensive registration versus the cost of defending against the abusive registration, then, you know, so I'd like others who are more expert on that portfolio cost to comment on that. But secondly, I think it's worth a follow-up conversation with some of this community about this third point. If you're going to spend money on things that you think you're addressing a call for action from this community, and that wasn't what was asked for,
right,
we're both going to be disappointed with each other.
Well, I guess I would say on the first thing, I would totally agree that if defensive registration just looks at the portfolio costs of maintaining defensive registrations, that's a deep underestimate of what the defensive registration costs are. I think that's an easy one.
Okay.
I think the harder question earlier was exactly how are we going to develop that? You know, how are the economists going to develop that that model? I think that's probably a little bit harder and, you know, may well make sense to work with the IP constituency. I think that the first two questions are trying to be a direct response mm-hmm. to what the community has asked for, as well as what comes up from the first phase study. And I think the third point is really coming from more of a staff implementation point of view, that if you can't get an overall model, could there be a application by application model, which may prove to be viable or not. But I think it's reasonable that we be able to ask those questions.
Let me ask Jay Scott or Fred if they want to ask further questions before I go to Steve Del Bianco, and then on to whoever.
Marilyn, this is Jay Scott. I mean, I guess I sit here bemused that we already have empirical evidence of what kind of PLDs create the least amount of problems with regards to defensive registrations and defending brands and consumer harm. And those are sponsored top-level domains to do upfront verification that the person asserting the rights are who they say they are and belong to a limited community that belong within the TLD.
That's
true. So, I mean, the fact that we're even having to have an economic study to prove something we all know the truth now seems to be ridiculous to me, and another spend that we don't need to spend and questions that we should have asked 18 months ago. But given that we are here in this, I think it's very clear that a company like mine that owns 27,000 domain names, of which we probably register variants of 10 for every product that come out, and then have to recover 15 to 20 by filing a $5,000 to $7,000 UDRP and then maintain them, because once you spend that kind of money to obtain them, you certainly don't want to let them go and have to obtain them again.
Right.
It becomes a cycle that is expensive, and that's with 261 possible variants, not with 10,000 variants. And a lot of those are spurred by consumer complaints of fraud that's been perpetuated upon them that come into our consumer helpline, and that we have to be reactive because there are actual consumers being harmed, not because we're the big, long-toothed, sharp-nailed corporate owner that wants to shut down everybody and their free speech.
Hey, Jay Scott, thanks for that. You know, so on the one hand, you're saying, you know, there's high costs associated with defensive registrations today, which I get that point, and I think that this, one of the points of this study is to look at that. I'm not sure I understand. Is your other point that basically that since sponsored TLDs, in your mind, are the least harmful, that there should be no generic TLDs?
I think that there should be no generic TLDs unless you can show that you've put into place high-value, high return rights protection mechanisms. And unfortunately, in a world where the backbone providers of the actual technology that allows you to run the domain name system are market participants, which we have empirical proof to show that they are, in fact, many of them bad actors that have not had any action taken against them, is a fundamental problem with the system. Back when we did the UDRP and we designed this, there was one registrar and one registry that simply provided services to push the pig through the pipeline. And now they have developed independent business models and changed their contracts and do a lot of things to game the system because they are actual market participants that create a false scarcity to drive up the value of a commodity of which they themselves are trading in. And I think that's a fundamental flaw in the system.
So, J. Scott, I'll draw a conclusion from that that I don't think you'll agree with, but, you know, if there were going to be criteria for deciding if there were net consumer harm for an individual application, one to look at might be rights protection mechanisms associated with that new TLD. So that my point to that as a path to consider.
And I would add,
I'm not so sure, Doug, that asking that additional question wouldn't be, I'd have to see it, but I'm not opposed to what you're saying.
Okay.
Jay Scott, it's Marilyn. I also think that another issue for all of us is, and I'm not going to focus on enforcement, I'm going to talk about the fact that there are accredited contracted actors in the system today who are contributing to this, actively contributing to it. And the, you know, if that may be another issue that has got to be addressed. And I understand the staff say it's too hard, people just game it, just up these bodies of the companies. But, you know, if this gaming goes on, you know, I think that's another thing to think about from the side of the business community, not just the IP community, but the business community. Much of the cost of dealing with this fraud and abuse and network attack and elsewhere is also distributed in other parts of this community.
So,
Marilyn, you said something that's really important there, and I just want to make sure that the fraud point isn't lost. We have one software client. At one point was recuperating 200 to 300 fraud-based URLs a month. So these are people who are targeting this company, trying to attack consumers to steal money from them. And that's, you know, a 300 domain name a month burden that this company has in just trying to protect consumers because there's not adequate rights protection mechanisms.
Right.
Everybody, this is Fabrizio. I just wanted to chime in really quick. One point, Marilyn, I totally agree. We do have accredited actors who are actually involved in registering type of squatted domains. Time Warner's had several instances where we've gone after domain names and actually found after filing UDRPs that the registrars will contact us to say it was actually them and could we drop the UDRP. With regard to the talk about studies, you know, I'm not sure to Steve or Jay Scott's point, you know, I won't go into whether the right questions are being asked or not, but I will say this, that at this point, it's a little hard to figure out doing studies what is what the impact of defensive registrations is or what's more prevalent across different TLDs. And the reason being, in Time Warner's instance, we have gone through and evaluated our portfolio. We have to constantly because of how many domain names we had. At one point, I think our company had between 50 and 60,000 domain name registrations. So you can imagine the cost there. So in evaluating, we're constantly going through and seeing what can be dropped or what do we think could be dropped and not potentially risk having to go back and pick up. So we'll go back and look at .biz, .us, .info, all of these domains where we initially did do things like stop proceedings, did do defensive registrations, held vast amount of portfolios, and reevaluate whether we should keep those or not. And one by one, we'll actually clean house a little bit, see if the infringement occurs again. So you could actually run a study today and you know, I haven't, but you could run a study today and say, hey, listen, maybe Time Warner didn't defensively register in .info, and that would actually be incorrect because you have to go back and see what we initially registered and held for years. And then, so taking a snapshot today wouldn't actually be accurate. So there's going to be a little difficulty in figuring out when you start doing across different categories of TLDs what's mostly defensive registration or not, because I think a lot of people are in our position where they're having to reevaluate
and having to cut costs. And in order to do that, one of the first things that people look at is their domain portfolio. So it's really a game of triage. And again, you know, you may look today and find or think that someone hasn't defensively registered in a certain TLD when they had, and they may have just dropped the portfolio recently.
So do you mind if I go ahead and make a couple quick comments? So we're going to run out of time. I mean, if this is really a hot topic, I could probably come back again during the week and talk about it some more. But just two quick comments, one of which is some of this discussion has really been focused on an appropriate way to estimate the total cost of defensive registration. So Fabrizio says, you know, you have to look over the lifetime of a registry or maybe during different economic conditions. Fred's saying look at, maybe fraud as an associated cost of defensive registrations. I think it would be welcome, you know, and I don't know what kind of, you know, I'll say consensus with quotation mark process that you'd have to go through, but for a business to come back and say, hey, here's the six bullets of things that we think you really should be looking at when you estimate defensive registrations, and that we would give that to the economists. Second thing is that I really hope everyone who's talking about fraud and registrar enforcement is going to really strongly support the staff position on registry agreements for new generic top-level domains, which I've seen a yes, because I've seen almost no support from either the IPC or the business constituency for this notion that we've seen specifically the RAA be a very difficult thing to change over time. Well, Steve, you'll get the last word. We've seen that, you know, these are really difficult to change over time, and that in a rapidly changing market where abuse and other things change rapidly, that the consensus policy process can sometimes be too slow, and we've seen that, I think, from your perspective in the case of the RAA. So that something I think businesses should be concerned with is, in the event of a rapidly changing dynamic registry marketplace, and I'll be up at 1 o'clock getting beat up by the registries on this, that we should have an ability to, with, you know, complete due process to be able to amend these agreements. So there's my Steve, you get to go, and I won't make a comment.
So actually, I get the last word because Steve gets to speak, and then I get to speak. But I'll just take a pointer from what you just said. On the question of the support from these constituencies on the registry agreement, some of us were able to attend a meeting in Washington, D.C., but probably we haven't had a face-to-face conversation about this point. So why don't we take that point under advisement within the constituencies. And we're going to hear from Pam Little this afternoon as
great.
Well. And let me go to Steve for his question and then do one last roundup.
Thanks, Marilyn. Doug, this is the topic of economic studies, right?
Okay.
So I'd like to make a positive
okay.
aspect of that, which is an appeal that the economists be tasked to look at benefits, not just cost, but benefits from the perspective of a website owner and an end user. The earlier study made a blanket statement that choice is good, so more choice must be better. Some GTLDs are good, so more GTLDs must be better. And inherent in that is just a blanket assumption at the macro level. But a micro level would be so helpful, because so many times my members will ask me, so why are we doing this again? From the standpoint of a domain name owner, and then my consumers that belong to my group will ask me, why again are we doing this? From a user's perspective. Namely, if we look at the perspective of how new domains are valuable, new GTLDs are more valuable, I'll bet we'll discover that you could look at it in categories, that geographical businesses or nonprofits or entities would see new geographical TLDs as a big value because they don't have a lot of choice today. You know, if there isn't a dot Virginia or a dot McLean, it's more choice. Another would be a small linguistic community. We heard Abril's presentation on Sunday. If they don't have any choice, then getting some choice is a huge benefit.
Right.
And finally, users of IDN scripts, non-Latin scripts. For them, they have no choice today. They will eventually get some country code top-level domain choice, but it still could be quite a while before they get GTLDs. When you have no choices, then getting at least one choice is monstrously beneficial compared to somebody that could be in a .bizcom or .net today, and now he can choose from hundreds of new variants of BizCom, Net, Org, Mil. So that would say an individual perspective of value or benefit is actually a function of the incremental choice that's given. I would really invite you to look at that. I think it supports what Steve Metallitz and J. Scott Evans have just said about looking from the cost perspective of categories. But the benefit perspective of categories is there too.
Do we have any other comments from the phone? So Doug has, I think, sort of made an offer to us, and I think we should figure out how we take him up on it. One offer might be we see if we could find any other time when interested parties could get together and talk yet this week. And secondly, whether we can, either at a CSG level or at the individual constituency level, maybe, you know, with a priority lead, Steve and Jay Scott from the IPC, just take a further look at, you know, some of the things that we think the economists really need to understand. We know it's very difficult to find economists who are deeply entrenched in actually understanding this marketplace, because Fred Feldman and I spent a significant amount of time with an extremely competent economist making sure that we educated them about it. And so we know you can't pick them off the trees. But this community can, I think, help to add some value at the front end.
So Marilyn, what I'll do is, you know, one of the things I think is bad about these kind of sessions is we have a discussion and, you know, there's a few comments made back and forth and what happens with that. So I'll just send you my notes, what I think I'm going to do from okay. this. And if you think I've missed something, you know, just please let me know. And, you know, I've taken sort of chicken scratch notes, so I may well have missed something, and happy to hear that if I have. And since I'm here, could I have 90 seconds for my own agenda with you?
You certainly can. We're going to hear from Barry if it's on this topic, and you can have 4 minutes for your own
Not
agenda.
Not even 2 minutes, maybe. I put that on mute, Ron. The mic was...
Check. Okay. I would just, you had mentioned us to be able to put together a list of some things that we should think that should be considered in the economic study. Is, and I'm kind of new to this process, but I would invite the economists that are designated to do this study that they actually spend time with each of the stakeholder groups and constituencies so that they get a true lessons learned of from our each individual's perspective on what they see, and then they can bring all of that together, and then I think that'll make a much better, well-balanced result, hopefully.
So I think that's a great suggestion. I will say that, you know, various times through this, for example, on this vertical integration question, just to finish, this vertical integration question, we did have the economists working on that, spent a lot of time with the actors involved. And that didn't work out to be a happy experiment. Both actors, you know, sort of were more entrenched and said we didn't accurately, you know, their interests were not accurately captured. So to me, it almost, while I think that's a very sensible suggestion and maybe in the end that's the right way to go, I think if you had a set of points that we could then compare at the end and say these things were addressed or not, I think that would, in my mind, help. But you know, point taken, I'll put that in my notes too. I'll tell you, it was not a success in the vertical integration, even though we spent a lot of time with registries and registrars.
So do I need to tell him we're so much nicer than those other guys? Jamie, let him do his pitch, and then we'll come back to you. Right? We need to hear your story.
Yeah, just very quickly, a couple things on my mind that would really love your help with. So, you know, when Kevin comes and you have to ask him to have his checkbook out, I think what you'll see is that, you know, more than ever, in fiscal year 11, which for those new to this process begins on July 1st, ICANN has very healthy finances. Our reserve fund is strong. Our revenue is strong. You know, I think we're one of the good things about this year, where we're in really tight budget, and you all are experiencing, you know, in your own business is experiencing this. You grind the fat out of your business. You really look at efficiency. I think we've been able to do a lot of that. I found out that a phone call I make to a guy who works for me in Brussels every day, I call him at 6 in the morning on Wednesdays, from my mobile phone, and I thought I'm being virtuous by doing this at 6 in the morning, it was costing tens of dollars to make that phone call. I'm doing that from Skype every day. So, you know, one of the things you do is you take out, you know, the sort of frivolous expense. Next year, we're beyond that, and we're really looking at, some really difficult trade-offs, and I think the community, I've been in 3 different meetings this week where somebody says, well, of course we must do X. There's no way to do X without sort of undoing Y. And really look for your participation in making those trade-offs, making your needs known, but not only saying what incrementally we should do, but what we shouldn't do. I'll say that as number one. And my number two agenda item is You know, we've sort of proven over the last few years we can add staff. You know, we can keep adding staff. There's some benefit of that. Hopefully, you know, with more professionalized parts of what we do. The GNSO right now has 21 working groups, I think, is the count. It may be more than that. There's N number, I won't say the number, of very active participants in the GNSO. Some of them are in this room and on this call. You take that number and divide by 21, that's not a big number of people per working group. And so I think that this same prioritization issue exists within the community. And it's not just a staff issue. It's not just a money issue. I would love, you know, and this isn't a Doug Brent issue. I think this is an ICANN-wide strategic, you know, critical issue. And but would love, I think business people more than perhaps other groups within ICANN really understand this notion of prioritization and the need to prioritize. And would love your help participation. I don't know that there's an official forum. I know Chuck is talking about this at the council level. But I think it's really critical for the community to consider. There's my that was my pitch.
Great. Jamie? Well,
first, I would like to inform. I'm very active in the prioritization team.
That's great.
And we intend to come to some output to the council at least at this March 13. Okay, and it's a very rush. It's a very April. Excuse me, April 13th.
Yeah. I wrote down March already. So
no.
It's, yeah,
it's April 13th. It's but what I would like to ask is. Is anybody of the economic firm that is contracted here in Nairobi?
No, they're not here.
I think they would profit from. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Doug, I'm going to, it's Marilyn, I'm going to offer a overarching thought here. You know, we are going to talk to Kevin about the operating plan and the budget. The GNSO Policy Council focuses on GTLD policy. While it's important to reprioritize and prioritize the work of the GTLD policy work, in actuality, the CSG in each of the constituencies has a significant interest and concern in the security and stability of the organization and on broader issues, the root scaling study, lots of other things. So, you know, I don't really think our comments are necessarily going to be limited. I also think that we all understand that we need to finish some of the work on restructuring and repurpose the work of the staff and our own work back into policy work, because those groups are still very active and they're very time-consuming and they need to be coming to a close for a number of reasons, and we understand that. But I would just say, understanding broadly the interest of business users in the overall work that ICANN does, that's a very important message that we need to keep reinforcing to all of the staff, that it's not just GTLD policy that these companies and these organizations focus on in their interest at ICANN.
That's great. And, you know, I think that, you know, personally having the broader business perspective is really critical. And you know, I know a lot of the people on the phone and value that input. And I think broad, I think as staff, we'd love to be engaging on more of the new GTLD issues with you.
Join me in thanking Doug for joining us. Thanks, Doug. So Doug's going to send us his notes. We're going to, this afternoon, in each of our groups, think about what we're able to do that's helpful. And I suspect you'll be hearing from each of the constituencies, maybe not all three, but you know, we may come back to you individually rather than as the CSG, because that may be the most expeditious thing.
And that, you know, that's worth pointing
out. Yeah. Yes. Guys, I want to wrap up here. Just to overview the afternoon sessions, there are two different meetings. One is a meeting of the ISP and connectivity providers constituency, and Tony's going to talk briefly about that. And then the other is the business constituency. The business constituency will be in this room, and, you know, these are open meetings. You're all welcome to decide which of the two meetings you go to. But you have to go to one now that you're here, right? Tony, can you maybe tell them a little bit about your meeting this afternoon?
Sure, it's the most important meeting, so that's an easy choice. I don't need to sell that. We have been talking to several members of the African community, not only Kenya, who have been kind enough to come to these proceedings today, and have indicated their interest in coming to our meeting this afternoon, which is at 3:30 p.m. in the TIFO room. Have I got that right? TIFO. Yes, which is in this building, I guess. And so we will do our best to welcome these newcomers to our meetings, and also try and give them initially a little background on why ISP should be involved in the ICANN proceedings and some of the history of our constituency. So we hope it will be a good meeting.
So I'll just mention, before I go to Rob, that the business constituency meeting starts at 2 in this room. It is open. And the agenda we will start with is the meeting with Kevin Wilson, the CFO, around the strategic plan, the operating plan, and the budget. So we hope that for those of you, if your meeting's not starting, we welcome having the ISPs come back in if you want to do that, Tony. It's up to you guys. The second speaker is Pam Little, who will be is from the compliance staff. And so between 2 o'clock and really 3:10, to the extent that you guys want to come back in, I think the IPC is going to dial back in and join us. So welcome if you choose to do that.
Well, thank you very much, Marilyn. I have one other question which intrigues me, actually. There's food outside, and the sign says NSO. I'm wondering what NSO means. Is that GNSO? Does it mean us? Because there is food and drink just outside.
Hey, Marilyn, did we hear that we were supposed to dial back in?
Yes, you will need to dial back in, and I'm going to turn to Rob for some comments.
Thank you, Marilyn. Just one other logistical thing for the business constituency members who are going to be back in this room at 2. There is a meeting from 1 to 2, so unfortunately you can't hang out because there's going to be another meeting. So just be aware of that. That meeting is likely to go to very close to 2, so just forewarned is forearmed. I can ask real quick about the NSO thing. Okay.
I got my
answer. Rob, thank you very much. Thanks to all of you who joined us, and we look forward to hearing you at 5 minutes after 2, since I'm sure we'll be getting into the room as we're, you know, sort of exchanging space with the previous occupants. Thanks again so much for joining us today.